We're joined now in our L.A. studio by our friend David Rubin, who is the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, the founder and president of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, and, as if that weren't enough, the author of The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. Welcome back to the show, Davey.
Thank you, Dennis. Good to be back with you.
How tremulous is the entire area now that the monster bin Laden has been put down?
Well, frankly, nothing has changed, except for the fact that bin Laden is not around. We in Israel have a lot of experience with targeted killings, and when a terrorist, you know, the Israeli army killed the blind sheikh of Hamas years ago, and the number two in the Hezbollah, but unless they're kept on the defensive, then one targeted killing just doesn't do the trick. I'm not saying it wasn't a good thing. The guy was one of the most evil terrorists of all time, but it just doesn't end the war on terrorism, and it's not going to end the riots in the Middle East, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. I would say that it's probably a more ominous sign. Guys like bin Laden and the zeal of their hatred must be one thing. The indifference of the United States towards Israel right now, that must be another sort of Damocles hanging over over your heads over there. No, indifference might be too strong a word, but our insouciance about the situation.
Yeah, well, President Obama has started his election campaign, and it's obvious that there's going to be a slight shift in his policy towards Israel. He's going to start to be friendlier, and he won't leave the Prime Minister of Israel fending for his lunch on his next visit. So there will be some changes, and it's not going to appear that President Obama is as anti-Israel as I believe that he really is.
Yeah, because I have enough friends who have told me that the big money on the island of Manhattan will be kept on the sidelines this time through due to his dereliction of at least manners as far as Israel goes. Well, a recent event that hasn't got much coverage here in the U.S. is the fact that there's now an agreement between, and you hate to see these two getting back together, Hamas and Fatah. Can you explain the groups for our listeners and tell us what you think about them coming together to hold coin with each other?
Oh, sure. Well, last Wednesday, they had a big ceremony in Cairo, Egypt, in Tahrir Square, right in the heart of the so-called pro-democracy movement in Egypt. And So the Hamas terrorist organization and the Fatah terrorist organization had a romantic reconciliation, where they got back together again after killing each other in Gaza and killing each other in Judea and Samaria, or the West Bank. And they decided that they're going to join forces to confront Israel. And one of those confrontation goals is going to be Well, number one, they're planning to have riots this weekend to get some publicity for their cause. And then in September, they're supposed to be going to the UN with a demand for unilateral recognition of an independent Palestinian state in the heartland of Israel.
The UN might as well be just another anti-Israeli player at this point. I mean, really, that's one of the reasons I don't even hear the UN anymore, because I strongly believe that they would much rather have that independent Palestinian state than they would Israel. You got a bunch of cranky, weird guys in fezes over there who don't have Israel's best intentions in hand. We're talking to David Rubin, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, and he's going to stay with us for another segment after this if you'd like to call in. The Islamic Tsunami is his book, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. And why don't you give a little background to our listeners as they queue up at 866-509-RANT. How young a man were you when you became the mayor? And describe the West Bank just in general. Give us the lay of the land over there for some of our listeners who hear these terms but are uninitiated.
Okay, well, I was 39 years old, not so young. And, we bounce around a lot of terms about Israel. And one of those terms is Palestine. We hear that term quite often, the Palestinians. The fact is that the word Palestine was given to the land of Israel by the Romans. It was after Israel was driven from the land 1900 years ago, the Roman conquerors named the land Palestina, naming it after the Philistines, who were the arch enemy of Israel. Huh. So that's one misnomer. Misnomer number two is the West Bank. It's a piece of land. It's kind of shaped like an embryo, which is right in the heartland of Israel, right in the heart of Israel, kind of like Kansas would be in in the central United States. And so it's really should be called by its historical names, which are Judea in the southern part of the West Bank and Samaria in the northern part of the West Bank. So these are all terms that have bounced around in the Middle East, and people don't really understand what people are talking about. The West Bank is up in the mountains, which certainly doesn't make sense. But that's a term that the Jordanians gave it in 1948 when they occupied the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, and between then and 1967 when Israel recaptured it in the Six-Day War.
Is there any truth in it? It's my favorite axiom about that part of the world, that if the Muslims or the Arabs stopped fighting tomorrow, there would be no war, and if Israel did the same, there would be no Israel. It's pretty much the truth, isn't it?
It's very much the truth.
You guys don't live for this, what do they call it, a blood, for the rest of time. You're not interested, right? You just like to go your own way.
Well, look, we don't wake up every morning thinking that we want jihad or holy war.
Right.
You know, I remember Yasser Arafat, the former PLO chairman and Palestinian Authority chairman, when he spoke in a mosque in the West, he said, we will liberate you with blood and fire, O Jerusalem. And then he went out to greet the Western media, and they said, well, Mr. Arafat, why are you calling for jihad and holy war and blood and fire? And he just gave that sly smile, and he said, I will continue my jihad for peace. that's an oxymoron, I don't know what is.
Well, he was, that's the sort of quote that gets you the Nobel Peace Prize, folks. That's all I can tell you.
How about that?
I think that cinched it for him, that and his long, extensive CV of baby killing. Unbelievable. That award means nothing anymore. The next great man will be the man who goes all the way to Oslo and says, I'm not accepting it until you take Arafat's back. All right, Mark in Palm Springs, you'll be first up. We've got David Rubin for another segment. His book is The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. And we need to hang together, these two nations, or as they say, hang separately.
Just not enough.
This is the official song of Israel. My boy went over to Tel Aviv and said it was the most beautiful woman he's ever seen in his life. What are those dames like over there, Davey? Beautiful. He said it was a turn on that they had all done service in the military, too.
Oh, I bet that was.
Those military women.
You like a girl who can break down an AK-47 in 2 minutes.
They know how to be aggressive.
We're talking to smooth David Rubin, and he is the author of The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. And I might add that 100% of the net proceeds from the sale of that book go to an organization that David himself started. So this is all the way around, he's doing the right thing. It is the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund. And for more information on that fund, go to Shiloh, S-H-I-L-O-H, IsraelChildren.org. Good on you, Davey. Good man. I got phone lines lit up. Let's go over to Mark in Palm Springs. Mark, you're on with young wizard David Rubin.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I'm from New York originally. I'm out in Palm Springs. I'm actually out in New York for 20 years. And it befuddles me that New York Jews are still supporting Obama. And, I read the news. I mean, what news are these people looking at? And I'm kind of confused. My question is confused because I'm just completely confused how most Jews can't look at this thing the way I look at it and go, we got the wrong person on our side.
Yeah, I sometimes think the diaspora is the victim of the Stockholm syndrome. What's your thought on it, Mark? Or I'm sorry, David.
Yeah, well, I'm actually not perplexed by it at all. Anyone who thinks that the call to prayer from the mosques is the prettiest sound on earth can't be pro-Israel. It just doesn't go together. President Obama has such a history of friends like William Ayers and Rashid Khalidi and Jeremiah Wright, all these people from Chicago who were his buddies and mentors. All of them are vehemently anti-Israel. So it doesn't surprise me one bit that President Obama would be the same.
Yeah, but what is the thing about, like he said, Manhattan, New York Jews, the diaspora? What is the thing there? I don't get it. They're so loyal.
Wait a second, Dennis. My understanding is that we only have about 7 more minutes. This will take a whole hour to discuss.
All right. Well, like I said, nothing. Bernie Brillstein used to tell me Jewish jokes that would make me blanch. And I'd say, what are you doing, Bernie? He'd say, I'm a Jew. I can tell the jokes. So I guess it's something in the self-loathing Jew mindset something.
Well, you are speaking to a reformed New York Jewish liberal right here. So.
Well, you saw it up close and personal.
Been there, done that.
All right. Let's go to Gary in Laguna Niguel. Gary, you're on with David Rubin.
Hi, Mr. Rubin. Hi, Dennis. Mr. Rubin, I got a question for you because I'd like to get sort of an inside opinion or thoughts on this. But it was my understanding that in 2000, Prime Minister Barak offered to create a Palestinian homeland on like 97% of the disputed territories, that his offer was rejected and there was no counterproposal made. I also read something about part of the reason of the rejection was that the Palestinians wanted to repopulate several million people into the Israeli homeland. And I'd like to understand that more. It's an astonishing thing, and you don't hear it talked about much, that this was offered. Why do you think it was rejected, and what actually happened?
Okay, well, first of all, that 97% of Judea and Samaria, the West Bank, that was offered to Arafat and the Palestinian Authority, I say thank God that it was rejected because it was the nearest thing to suicide that Israel could have done. And furthermore, they rejected it because their main goal is the entire destruction of the State of Israel, and they want to do exactly what the Romans did 1900 years ago, which was drive us into the sea, scatter us around the world, and rename the country Palestina. So we're not going to be a part of that, and even Ehud Barak, who was a very misguided defense minister and still is, it would have been a terrible disaster for Israel if it had been accepted by the Palestinian Authority.
Would the Palestinians have passed on it if it had been 100% of it? You know, you get the feeling they need a raison d'etre to kill the Jewish people. And if you gave them everything they wanted, I get the feeling.
Oh, it wasn't an issue of percentages. It was an issue of Jews. They wanted to just get rid of all of us.
Yeah. Well, it must send a chill up the Israeli spine when they hear the head of our space program say that the president of the United States has told him his prime directive is to Arab or Muslim outreach. And I was thinking, I see these parades on the streets over there in Syria and stuff, and I think I don't see a lot of rocket scientists in that crowd. I think that the Muslim world will want to go to the moon the day after Israel sets up Israel on the moon. That's what I think. We're talking to David Rubin. The book is The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. And Neil in Toronto has a question. You're on with David Rubin, Neil.
Good morning, Mr. Rubin. I have a question about if there's anything that can be done to block the resolution that Hamas and Fatah would be seeking in the at the United Nations this fall, that you would expect they would be seeking. because I understand this is a General Assembly matter, and therefore there are no vetoes.
Well, I think that there isn't much that can be done in the General Assembly because, as you heard Dennis say before, they're all sitting there wearing their fezes in the General Assembly. However, Israel can respond very easily. Once they declare their unilateral Palestinian state, Israel declares Jewish-Israeli sovereignty over the West Bank, over Samaria and Judea, or at least the areas that have been populated by the 500,000 Jews who live there.
Here's how I think it'll play out, as it always inevitably plays out with the that crowd. I think Hamas and Fatah will have a death battle over what to name their amalgam. It'll either be Hatah or Hamas. We'll go to the mat about that and hopefully blow each other's heads off. There you go. In a perfect world. All right, Rubes, good to talk to you, baby.
Yeah, same here.
How's your family? You good?
Everyone's doing great, thank you.
All right. Well, you got good radio voice, man. I don't know if you're interested in that, but you could spin a top 40, I don't know.
It worked really well with that Barry White song before.
Yeah, he was grooving.
All right. Well, I'll try to do a duet with Barry one of these
there
days.
There you go. Sounding good. The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama, the author, David Rubin. And once again, 100% of the net proceeds go to the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund. That website, again, for more information, ShilohIsraelChildren.org. Davey Rubin's a man. Welcome here anytime. That's a match.